It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Kia ora, Mayor Phil Goff, how are you this morning?
I'm very fine, thanks, Rachel.
Well, we've got some big topics to talk about today. Let's start with the tornado that caused a lot of destruction in Papatoetoe over the weekend and very sadly resulted in one death as well. And we're absolutely thinking of the family involved there. But there are a lot of people who are living in very precarious situations at the moment. I think it is something like 62 houses that have suffered really severe damage. And there are a lot of people waiting to hear what's going to be happening with their homes. What are we seeing from the council in terms of support? The government has put forward, I think, $100,000 to rebuilding and supporting that community. But what is the council doing to intervene at the moment?
Well, there's a whole lot of things that have happened, and I've been down there for about 10 hours over the weekend just looking at what the damage is, what's happening to fix the problems, talking to people about what their big concerns have been. First of all, we'd acknowledge our condolences to the family of Mr. Prasad, who was killed at the inland port. That's the biggest tragedy out of this tornado, leaving behind a wife and two children aged 10 and 13. In terms of the residential area, it's a real miracle, actually. Having just looked at what happened there, that there weren't people seriously injured or killed. Power poles snapped off, crushing cars, power lines all over the roads, flying obstacles. I mean, you see the sides of houses that have been penetrated by fence posts that have been flung through the air, windows blown out. In one case, I went to a room where a cot was just under the window, glass everywhere, and the child wasn't even scratched. In terms of remedial action, first thing we did, in the first couple of hours after the tornado, we set up a command centre on Cavendish Drive. So we pulled together all the emergency services, fire and ambulance and police and Auckland Emergency Management. By the Sunday, we'd had 43 building inspectors out inspecting every house that was damaged through the area. And as you pointed out, there was initially 62, actually I think it was Search and Rescue, that said that 62 places were uninhabitable. We think that number may come down a bit. We've had, obviously all the power lines, we've restored the power now except on the uninhabitable places. We set up an emergency centre to provide accommodation, and I think at one stage we had up to 8 or 9 families being provided with emergency accommodation. We've been working with volunteer groups, Red Cross, going from place to place to make sure that we knew what people's needs were. Police have been patrolling the area to provide secure for houses that obviously didn't have any security. So a big operation, but a huge response from family and friends, official sources. Last point I'll make, it's a long list, sorry, was that we've set up a mayoral relief fund to which I've put in $100,000 from the mayoral funds, and the government has matched that with $100,000, and we'll be launching an appeal today. This is a backstop, really, for people that suffer from severe hardship because they're not protected in other ways. Many people will be fully insured and many people will have sufficient resources, but we want to ensure that there's no hardship arising out of the tornado and the impact on people's lives.
So for those people who are currently living at friends' houses or at family houses, that's not a permanent situation, and even if insurance comes through, as you say, there is still the situation of where do people live in the meantime. Is there any direct support coming through at the moment for that particular immediate situation?
Yeah, those with insurance, the insurance agreements normally provide for the provision of emergency accommodation for as long as the house is not habitable. So the first and the biggest response will be the protection people have through their insurance policies. Where for some reason that doesn't work, the next step is friends and family. People feel most comfortable staying with friends and family, but they don't want to do it for a prolonged period. Where there is in the immediate aftermath of the tornado, and it will probably be continuing through this week, where people just can't, they've got nowhere to go, then we've made provision for hotel accommodation for those people. And no doubt the Ministry of Social Development's been on site. We've got an information hub at the Alan Brewster Centre in Tavern Lane. Then we can work out what sort of support payments need to be made. And as I say, the Mayoral Relief Fund and the $100,000that the government is going to contribute on top of the $100,000 we've put in, that's a backstop just to pick up situations where people are in a situation of hardship and where we can do something then to help out.
Well, I'm sure we'll come back to this in the coming weeks, but let's talk a little bit about Putiki Bay, which we have been touching base on this show with you a few times now. We did see an escalation last week where I think it was 26 police presence down at the marina site and some altercations between protectors and the police there. That's also resulted in members of the Green Party, Elizabeth Kirikiri and Chloe Swarbrick, making their way down to the marina site in solidarity with those protectors and also to understand what's been happening there as well. And we've seen a large public meeting held on Waiheke Island on the weekend. Is this a point at which you think we need to see a halt in the actions to have some more conversation happen?
Well, you can't say that because you have to follow the law, and that applies to council and it applies to individuals as well. I've sought specific opinion from our council officers on this, and their advice to me is we cannot, and I'm reading it, we cannot change or interfere in the consent now as we do not have that authority. Then it goes on, our coastal and ecological specialists will consider third-party perspectives when reviewing the updated Korora Little Penguin Monitoring and Management Plan, which was received Tuesday the 16th of June, that's last week. We will continue to monitor and ensure compliance with the consent conditions. There's 117 consent conditions, which includes ensuring the well-being of the little blue penguins, which we will do independently to the consenting process.
So what's that? What's that going to actually look like?
Part of the requirement of the consent that was given, and just remember, this consent has been held up, has been upheld by the Environment Court, the High Court, the Court of Appeal and the Supreme Court. Nobody can say that this process has not been validated. It has been validated at every level of court in the land. And the management plan required of the developer was quite considerable. The developer then took on an independent ecological specialist in the Little Blue Penguin, somebody by the name of Dr. Lee Bull. And that person has further tightened the management
plan.
We're now monitoring to ensure that it is fully implemented.
Does that mean somebody down at the site, or what does that look like?
Look, I don't know the details. I'm not on the ground, but they have said to me that they will, on an ongoing basis, ensure compliance with the consent conditions. And the developer will know that there are many, many people watching what they do. So I don't think there's much scope for the developer being in a position to breach any of those consent conditions without that being thoroughly reported. And our team will do its role in monitoring to ensure that all of those conditions designed to protect the little blue penguin are upheld.
Do you think, just a last question on this, do you think that that was perhaps an excessive police presence down at the marina that we saw last week?
Well, you have a thing called constabulary independence, which means that politicians don't interfere in the operational, situation with the police on the ground. There is an independent police authority that monitors if anything is done excessively. And I've heard a variety of different reports, some of them conflicting, some of them pointing the finger at a minority of the protesters, and some of them saying, did the police really need that many people? But, the police are often the meat and the sandwich in this thing. They're required. Their role is to uphold the law. The law is pretty clear on that, the law respects the right of protest, but it also respects the right of people to carry out what they are lawfully entitled to do. and they can't therefore just stand back and say, "Oh no, you can stop that process," even though it's gone through every level of every court in the country. They have to uphold the law, so you've got to feel a little bit of sympathy for the police.
Well, let's let's talk very briefly before we run out of time about what's happening with the America's Cup, because that's obviously been a big thing for Auckland in the last year. We've had, of course, the cup held here, and I think there was a great expectation that there would be the next cup held here if we did indeed win, and we're seeing that that's perhaps not going to be the case at the moment. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, well, we did have that expectation, and it was a legitimate expectation. Every defence by Team New Zealand after they've won a cup has been held on our home waters, and this creates a new precedent that I know, you know, because I've received a communication from a lot of people, people are incredibly disappointed about. Council put $113 million into upgrading infrastructure for the last cup. Now, you know, I didn't put money, Council didn't put money into the hosting fee, because we said, well, no, we're not going to use rates for that purpose. We will upgrade infrastructure because after the cup's over, we've still got the benefit of the upgraded infrastructure. But that you know, the team base land on Wynyard Point, the Viaduct Event Centre, which is probably the best base that the Team New Zealand has ever had, the breakwaters, all of that work is there and ready to go. And I think our expectation was that having invested in that once, we would get the benefit of two cycles at least of the America's Cup, particularly mm-hmm. since the first cycle was interrupted by COVID and we didn't get the economic benefits, but we did get the thrill and the excitement and the vibrancy of what happened and the great publicity overseas of how we were managing the cup. Everything went as it ought to have gone, and you'd have to think that it's kind of sad that Team New Zealand is now looking overseas. I look on yachting, I guess, as a sport, but they look on it as a business, multi-million-dollar business, and I think business considerations have prevailed over sport.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Mayor Phil Goff. It's always great to have you on the show. We'll talk to you again next week. Have a good one until then.
Thanks, Rachel. It's always a pleasure. Cheers.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Thank you.